Blog Talk Radio.
Interesting day, the second day of June 2014, and of course the release of Bo Bergdahl, the U.S. Army now sergeant, who was captured by the Taliban, or who walked away from his post, leaving his gun, supposedly drunk, and who embraced their agenda. There's a lot of controversy about whether he's a traitor or not. Military people are looking at this, and military veterans. And, of course, it brings up the case in the Vietnam War of Robert Garwood, a U.S. Marine. Was he a Vietnam War deserter? It's an interesting parallel, very similar situation. And we also have had people who were captured, military veterans, active duty military were captured during the Korean War, and who were taken to Russia and to China, and who were ordered to teach English to KGB infiltrators and spies and that sort of thing. And, of course, they deny that the Russians and the Chinese deny that they did these things, but there's a growing body of credible evidence that they did take these captured Americans, and I heard a figure of about 100 of them, and brought them to Russia, and of course they were ordered to teach Russians who were going to be infiltrated into the United States and Canada. Now, the interesting thing that people are not looking at is how did the Taliban treat Russian POWs? From what I understand, I unfortunately didn't have the microphone with me, but I did talk to a Russian POW, not prisoner of war, but Russian, who had served in Vietnam and Afghanistan. I have his book and everything. He was glad to get out of there. There are Russian soldiers who are veterans of the Afghan war. From what I understand, that when the Taliban captured a Russian, they forced them, like the Muslims and Islamists did when they captured French and British in previous wars. If they weren't circumcised, they were forcibly circumcised. And maybe it was a half circumcision. This is where the term Christian dog comes from, because what they did was when the Islamic armies captured a French Foreign Legion or British or any other European military person, they would do a half circumcision. very brutal procedure. So I understand that the Russians who weren't, Russian POWs who weren't circumcised were forcibly circumcised. We don't know if it was a half circumcision, but considering how crude these people are, you know, you got to wonder. We don't know about the boy Bergdahl. One of the facts about, and this is interesting, about circumcision in the United States, that after World War One, the American doctors, there were so many American soldiers who were coming down with venereal diseases and all those other diseases, that the military doctors decided that if a draftee or an enlistee was not circumcised in the interest of sexual sanitation, that they would be circumcised, and if they, the term was used, cutting off your flap wings, and if they refused, they were court-martialed. And of course, guys who did it, who agreed to be circumcised, who weren't circumcised, they supposedly got a week's leave. These are the stories that I hear. And of course, my experience with the Vietnam War was that I was an opponent. I actively worked against it because I had an argument with the Undersecretary of State, George Ball, at Asilomar back in the 70s. There was a conference down there, and I challenged him. I said, isn't it true that one of the reasons Americans are in Vietnam is because there are minerals there and there's oil, a reserve oil in the South China Sea? He replied, anybody who believes that's been smoking too much pot. He said this while he himself was reeking of vodka. Of course, you know, he's another name that's gone down the sewer of history. The other thing was during, this was in 1964-65, when I was a student at Wright College, a debate was set up between myself and then U.S. Representative Roman Puchinsky, who had been a pilot of a B-29 in the first B-29 bombing of Tokyo. This was after General Doolittle. And during the debate, I asked him, what is the Johnson administration doing to, get these captured American airmen out of Vietnam, the ones who were shot down? He replied that he had asked Lyndon Johnson to order the installation of tape recorders in the cockpits. So he, Puchinsky, is the father of the black box tape recorders, which also has been in the news quite a bit because of that missing Malaysian aircraft. So there's a lot of history there, and I can get into more. The 1968 San Francisco, not San Francisco, but the Chicago Democratic Presidential Convention. Now, on this day, we've also heard that King's Juan Carlos, who was appointed by General Missimo Francisco Franco over his father, over Juan Carlos's father, Francisco Franco thought that Juan Carlos's father was too liberal, and he thought he could control. In fact, he oversaw the education of then young Juan Carlos. Juan Carlos abdicated today, and this is quite interesting because, well, not only because of the scandals and the incompetence, but also his grandfather, Alfonso XIII, abdicated the Spanish throne in 1931. This led to the Republic being set up in Spain, and that led to the Spanish Civil War, a very brutal war in which the German Luftwaffe tested their aerial bombing tactics on Guernica and other places in Spain. And also the Nazis, Hitler and Mussolini, fought on the side of Franco, and the Russian communists fought on the side of the Republic, El Pasionario. And of course, after the Republicans lost the Spanish Civil War, their country's gold reserves were taken to Russia, and the Russians never returned those reserves. They probably spent them. Now, also in this abdication, the question now, we've already seen the richest woman in the world, or one of the richest women in the world, Beatrix of Holland, whose own mother abdicated, Wilhelmina, Juliana. Well, Wilhelmina, her grandmother, abdicated in favor of Juliana, of the mother of Beatrix, and Beatrix recently abdicated in favor of her son. It's the first time there was a male heir in over 100 years in the history of the Dutch throne of the House of Nassau or the House of Orange. So the question now, will Elizabeth II of England abdicate in favor of her, I don't think it's going to be Charles, growing controversy. Would be very interesting if Charles would step aside, since he is the heir apparent when Elizabeth dies, the deal will be made that Prince William, her grandson, will be the next king of England if he lives, or his son, Prince George, who was named after his great-grandfather, George VI, who died in 1952. Now, also interesting, on this day, Queen Elizabeth II was crowned Queen of England. I remember at school, we had a little TV, and at boarding school, the nuns made us watch the delayed TV broadcast of the crowning of Elizabeth II. And she's been around a long, long time. She was out of the country when her father died. A lot of tragedy in that House of Windsor, that German house, as we call it. Another thing that's interesting is a friend of mine brought this up, that Joseph Douglas, a military author and worked in intelligence, he wrote a book, Red Cocaine, which is about the communist conspiracy, I hate to use that phrase, or communist plan to load, to dump, infiltrate cocaine dealers in the United States. I haven't read the book. I've been trying to get a copy of it, but there's a lot of it seems to be a lot of credibility to this that we have seen here in California of the radical left pushing kinds of drugs on our youth, and also tomorrow in San Jose, the pot clubs are offering marijuana for votes. In effect, that anybody who votes tomorrow has to show a stub. And if they want a bag of pot or whatever, I think it's more than one joint, they will be taken care of. Now, in the history of vote fraud in the United States, usually what happened was, and this is why we have alcohol taverns that are, at least in Illinois, were closed on election day, was that precinct captains and corrupt Democratic politicians, and even Republican politicians for that matter, would ply voters with alcohol and persuade them to vote for the party's candidates. So taverns and liquor stores couldn't sell alcohol on election day. That's the origin of that. Maybe we should close down pot clubs. In fact, I should bring this up. Should pot clubs be closed on election day? it seems this is the new form of bribery, marijuana for your vote. We shall see tomorrow. Now, upcoming will be June 6th, will be the anniversary of D-Day, and I have the only interview he did, General Philip Berrigan. General Berrigan is not related to the Berrigan brothers, the priests and nuns who were involved in Vietnam War protests. Berrigan was born in Boston. He went to U.S. Military Academy at West Point, became an engineer. He knew George Patton and Eisenhower and all these people. He's from that period, from that Irish ethnic Catholic tribes of Massachusetts. Anyway, Berrigan had served all around the United States and in Europe, handling military engineering projects. And he was the second in command at Normandy on June 6, 1944. And his responsibility was overseeing the Mulberry Bridges. Mulberry Bridges were prefabricated bridges. This idea supposedly came up from Churchill, and it was to facilitate the landing of tanks and trucks and other equipment on the beaches of Normandy, so to move fast and to knock the Germans and their panzers off track, as it were. Interestingly, Marshal Erwin Rommel was on his way to visit his wife for her birthday on June 6th. He was not there to command the frontline forces of the German army. It's interesting, in North Africa, Rommel was invalided home to Germany for treatment for nasal breathing difficulty or infliction illness that he had. When LL Le Mane occurred with Montgomery, when Montgomery had 1,000 gloves and guns and pummeled the unsuspecting German Africa Corps to the ground, Rommel was not present at the beginning of that battle. He was never there at the crucial battle. It's very interesting in his history. He had a very sterling military career in World War I. But, and of course, he was Hitler's favorite general until Rommel was involved in the 1944 plot to assassinate Hitler at the Wolf's Lair in Germany, you know, with von Stauffenberg and others. So these are some of the interesting things we're going to be bringing up. And I would recommend that you get Joseph Douglas's book, Red Cocaine, and there are other books out on the drug epidemic Americans are being subjected to by the radical left. We also have the blue cocaine, which has come up here in San Francisco and Northern California, and this is cocaine from Bolivia. A lot of people don't know that Bolivia is also a major cocaine manufacturer, trafficker, and we have the case of Rosario Anaya, who's from Cochabamba, which is Cochabamba is to Bolivia what Medellin is to Colombia, big cocaine trafficking location, and this Rosario was on the San Francisco School Board. She illegally received many hundreds of thousands of dollars and up to $1 million or more federal poverty funds for the various controversial activities she was involved in. She was a San Francisco school board member in San Francisco County, but she didn't live in San Francisco County. She lived in Alameda County, and we exposed her on that. She hired, so he claimed, that he was a contractor, a guy named, excuse me at the moment. Anyway, this guy was a cocaine trafficker. He worked on supposedly Rosario's house in Alameda, in Oakland, rather, in Alameda County, and he set the house on fire, and he fled back to Bolivia. Rosario filed a complaint with the Mexican authorities because this so-called contractor came back through Mexico with a load of cocaine, and the Mexicans intercepted and imprisoned him. Rosario tried to sue him in the Alameda State County Courts, and she sent a letter to the Mexican authorities asking if he could be released to come up to Alameda County to defend himself against this lawsuit, and they told Rosario where to go. These are some of the scandals. Interestingly, on this vote fraud, we're seeing more and more lawyers involved living in other counties. We're seeing more people who are illegals. We've done quite a bit on our Californians Against Voter Fraud website. One of the most interesting vote fraud cases that I encountered was of a bail bondsman here in San Francisco. His office was right across the street from the Hall of Justice, the criminal courts building. And this guy claimed to have lived in San Francisco and was registered to vote in San Francisco. But we found out he really lived in another county, San Mateo County, which in fact made his application vote fraud. He's now dead, but it's an interesting case. So here a bail bondsman commits a crime. And usually you think of bail bondsmen as guys who put up money for people who are accused of criminal activity and have been indicted or charged or whatever. So here we have that bail bonds case. We also have the brother of the former district attorney, Terrence Hellman. His brother was claiming to live in San Francisco in one of the apartment houses that the Hellman family owned. Turned out the brother lived in Alameda County, another case like that. We have another case of the two lesbians, Carol Migdon from New York and her lover. a big lawyer in Berkeley, and the lawyer was registered to vote in San Francisco at this closet-sized condo, and everybody said she doesn't live here. Not Rosario, but Carol Migdon, and the lover never lived in San Francisco, and certainly not in a closet-sized condo. We expose that lawyer. So, you know, these lawyers are just as bad as these ghetto people and anybody else who engages in vote fraud. You know, the problem with the legal, I don't call it a profession, but a problem with a lot of lawyers is the growing number of lawyers, I think, because they have a law degree, that they are untouchable. Well, you can tell that to a lot of these lawyers who are now being indicted and prosecuted for being involved in the international sex trade. Excuse me. So now also we're coming up to, this is a quote, Pride Month in San Francisco. And we have the canonization of St. Harvey Milk, the post office stamp. It's interesting that the people who exposed Harvey Milk were themselves gay in their private life. Randy Schultz worked for the San Francisco Chronicle. He later died of AIDS, but he was gay, and he exposed Harvey Milk for Harvey Milk's involvement with underage boys. Nick Rommel, who was gay, recently died. He did a lot of exposés on various corrupt politicians. He also exposed Harvey Milk. I had a confrontation with Harvey Milk in his camera shop on Castro when I responded to an ad that he had placed a big discount to develop some pictures. And I took advantage.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big Ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one, I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet up.
Politics and poker, politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. Need a game for children, need a game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet,
where's the call of duck?
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paratrays.
Bet 'em.
Little trays, good as gold.
I'll say.
Raise your five.
I'll call.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Fanyashinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot!